You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt, where we talk about hunting, shooting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the great outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it.
Oh, I've been hanging to get Sam back on because I think about a week or so after I took my first state forest deer, when you were there, I'll let you tell the story, man. How you been? And let's get into it.
Yeah, man, been good. It's been finally a successful rut, so it feels pretty good to even just say that. It's funny that you're mentioning our hunt before because, I was totally thinking about that right at the end of the hunt, you're like, all right, it's your turn. And I sort of like remember like going back, like driving home and stuff like that. And I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, it just feels so close. We just got so close so many times and you just start to feel it sort of just get pieced together a little bit, you know, you just like learn little bits, and little pieces. And, eventually you just sort of, you find your groove, not through lack of trying, not through lack of a lot of mistakes and a lot of years. But yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long time coming. Finally got to do the deed. It was a funny sort of, a funny setup, a funny situation. Cause, I've just moved down to Canberra recently and we were just going to come down and look at a house and we're like, oh, you know, just pop by the private property of the landowner that owns this place and just pop by and just have a quick camp on our way down because my missus hasn't met him yet and stuff like that. So we're just like, oh, you know what? I'll just pop by. I'll just do a quick afternoon, just a quick evening. You know, it's early, right? They probably might be just sort of hanging out. And we got down there late as well. I think we ended up getting in at about 6 p.m. And I think at about 6:15, 6:20, I was pretty much ready and ready to head out. And I decided, it's always a funny thing. There's two things that happened the night before. One thing was that I forgot to bring my GoPro. So I forgot to pack that. And it's the first time I haven't had the GoPro sitting on the front of the camera in 5 years. and the second thing was I washed my clothes, but I didn't wash it in the anti-scent stuff. I ran out. I was a big sort of sucker for that kind of thing. And it was funny because I remember listening to the Hunter's Campfire boys. And they were like, oh, yeah, I'll just like drench myself in deodorant or whatever. You know, it's all about the win. And so I remember thinking, I'd be like, oh, this would be kind of funny if that sort of, you know, it was a factor, it came off. And about 6:30, I'm sort of heading in there and we got a nice sort of right to left breeze and I'm heading sort of down into a gully, basically straight off the back of a landowner's property. It's straight off down the back there and not too long before you start to see action. And I'm looking across the field and I see over in a dam there and there's a deer standing on top of the dam. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, there's sort of something that clicks in your head that once you see one, you're like, all right, they could be around any corner. And it sort of like tightens you up a little bit. So I slowly make my way down and I decide to just slow right down. And so I'm looking down and this gully sort of feeds down right to left. And there's a sort of a thicket of trees and then there's a little bit of a clearing behind it before it gets into the thick stuff. And so I'm sort of easing down into there and I've got this big old rock in front of me as cover and it's a pretty good spot, but it's quite crunchy. So all of a sudden I sort of stop, take a couple steps and at this point, I'm just using my rangefinder to glass because I don't, you know, really need binos and everything was so close that it's just a little bit of extra magnification. So I like to just use that so I'm not fiddling around too much. And so I have a quick look and all of a sudden I see the back end of a tail and the fella just walks behind the tree. So I didn't really know what it was at that point, if it was a doe or a buck or what, but I knew it was a deer. And, you know, as the saying goes, if it's brown, it's down. So I was like, okay, we're on here. So I give a quick range as well to see how far it was, and it was about 63 meters. And so he's feeding just up behind these trees, but sort of up on the bank, up to sort of my level in line with the bank. So I'm like, okay, this is my chance. And I quickly drop my pack while he's out of sight, and I just get rid of everything I can that's sort of unnecessary. And I sort of slowly ease into this little patch that's sort of around in the middle of a semicircle of bracken. At this point, I'm assuming this guy's just still feeding in the direction that he was, provided something crazy didn't happen. I knew I wasn't going to be chasing any girls, or I didn't think there were any girls around, to be honest, at that point. So I didn't really worry about that. So I was like, okay, he's going to sort of gently feed up into this area. So I sort of get situated in my spot, and it's in the middle of this clearing. So I have sort of enough room that I can move left or right if I need to. And I take a quick range at a couple of trees. And if you imagine a triangle where the furthest point is away from you in the middle, and then you got 2 points either side of your left and right. So the furthest point I ranged was a tree. It was about 44 meters. And then 2 20-meter trees. Yeah, pretty good at judging the 20 meters with your bow hunter. 2 20-meter trees either side. And I was like, okay, that's sort of my range at this point. Skills weren't as sharp as they could be. Like, I've still been shooting, of course, but I hadn't been shooting, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. So I just knew that I was going to limit myself to a pretty close range and just see what happened. So I was thinking, you know, 20, max 30 meters at this point. So I stop and all of a sudden he decides to start feeding up, and he's going under this tree at the 44 meter tree, and he's got his head up and he's preaching hard. He's absolutely given those branches a good old lick. He just loves it. You know, he's obviously not a care in the world. The wind again is feeding sort of downslope, so he's quite far away, but he's also a crosswind from me, which really helped because I knew that eventually he'd be above me if it all went to plan. So at this point, I'm also judging, like, am I going to stalk in on him? Am I going to lay back? It's all going through your head, and just, you know, while the heart rate's also pumping just like nothing else. So I sort of stopped myself. I was like, all right, you can slow down a little bit. And as I'm sort of thinking that, all of a sudden, as if, you know, like some miracle, he just turns and just walks right towards me. He's like, it was like he had a death wish or something. I don't know what it was, but he was just like, okay, I'm just going to come right up towards you. There was some really nice grass there where he was feeding, so it was a nice little sort of patch. And I imagine at some point he'd done it quite a few times before, because I'd gotten pictures from the landowner of just a few deer just being down the side of that house, sort of now behind where I was. And it just, yeah, he just must have been his sort of regular route. And so he's basically coming straight towards me, and all of a sudden he's at the 20-meter tree. So I managed to get a quick drawback as he's got his head dipped. And I'm doing that sort of half hard crouch. And I think that's definitely something, a bit of a takeaway for me, is practice in those half crouch positions where you're just above a bit of brush, because you're never doing it. You're either standing up or, you know, if you practice kneeling, that's awesome as well. But it was a very awkward position, and I'm sort of rises just above the brush, and you can sort of just see the top of his back, and a little bit of further down, a bit of rib cage, but really it was not a very good sort of sight in terms of sight picture. So he's still feeding towards me. And again, it was funny because I refer back to referencing also the podcast that we listened to on the way, I think it was the way down to hunting, the Becoming a Bow Hunter podcast. Shout out to those boys. That was awesome, awesome episode. And they were talking about the best shot that you take sometimes is the shot that you don't take. It's the one just hold off. If it doesn't feel right, you've been holding for too long, whatever it is. And I had him front on, it was covered, and I was like, you know what? And somehow, I don't know how I did this, as again, he head dipped down and I let down. And then all of a sudden he's feeding up, and he sort of, I lose him out of sight because the bracken's quite high at this point, and I'm sort of underneath a little bit. And so he's feeding up directly now upwind of me. So everything's perfect in terms of that, and he disappears out of sight. So I'm like, well, all I got to do here is just make the move. So I just take my shoes off and I slowly creep in, just sort of round up to the left. So he's sort of fed up to the right there, and I'm just around to the left where there was a little bit of a break in the bracken. And I'm slowly creeping there on my hands and knees and getting spiked on and just having to be real quiet. And eventually I get up and I just sort of have to trust that he's there, because everything's dead quiet. You know, I can't see anything. I can't hear anything. I couldn't even smell him, which was good. but yeah, and eventually I draw back and, you know, slowly rise up, and he's just there standing perfectly broadside. I mean, it just doesn't get much better than that. It's the picture you imagine 1,000 times and the picture I've imagined 1,000 times. And yeah, just focused on keeping my elbow high and just slowly just giving that trigger a little bit and punched him through. And, you know, it just made that very satisfying sound that, it, you know, that smack. And he sort of trotted off to about 15 meters. And I'm just in a complete shock at this point. He's looking back at me. He doesn't know what happened. And then he trots off about another 30 meters. And at this point, I've somehow pulled out my phone in the I don't know, some pure shock rush. And I started to film the end of it as well. So I've got a video where you see him sort of doing that cartwheel of death that you see them when they do when there's just nothing left. And yeah, I think it's some sort of cardiothoracic shock or something. And they just sort of lose all balance. And yeah, and then he piled on over, and that was it. And all of a sudden, it was just complete elation, shock. What the hell just happened? Just absolute, yeah, malarkey in my brain. It was just like, I mean, this is something I've been imagining for 5 years.
That's bloody cool.
Yeah. But yeah, excuse the long form story there. But yeah, hopefully that was enough info for you, Matt.
Yeah, no, perfect, mate. I'm super happy for you. Like when we were talking about going on the way back, and I know I suggested getting a rifle and saying, hey, you know, like there was so many times that you could have had a crack in that state forest, but I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you hung out and you were kept true to where you wanted to head, and it all played out for you and you got him on the deck, because that's just bloody awesome. I'm so happy for you. How good did it feel? Like you've, as you said, 5 years. When you released the arrow, how nervous were you? Because everyone talks about buck fever. You hadn't got a deer up until this point. It's been 5 years in the making. Was the pin jumping up and down, or were you pretty steady, or how did you manage those nerves?
So it's interesting you mentioned that, because when I had originally drawn back right before that, I guess I'd assume that was the moment. I actually employed a breathing technique that I've been using quite a lot just in my general day-to-day life, because I generally have to manage a little bit of anxiety from time to time. So this is a really handy technique that I use called box breathing. And it's essentially just, if you imagine the shape of a box, you just breathe in for a count of two or three and hold for two or three, and then exhale for two or three, and then hold the exhale for two or three. And I think it's used by the Navy SEALs, and it's a pretty sort of common breathing method, but that just really helped me a lot. And then, you know, to then draw back the second time, I think I was just that little bit more comfortable. And again, the visualization, I mean, I've literally imagined that scenario when I've been doing my practice shots. Like sometimes I'll close my eyes. Like I even used to plug my headphones in and listen to bucks croaking and so just trying to get the blood up a little bit. So when you go through all that, I think it really does prepare you. And honestly, I think that at that point I wasn't shaking. I think I was so in the moment that it was just like this natural thing that just happened. I think that's why the shot was so good, and I think that's why it all happened like this sort of fairy tale.
It's funny. You talked about visualization there, and it's something I teach a lot about, of what athletes do to practice in the moment. And you see that they go through a, you know, I always refer when I teach the students at school about it, I refer to like Jamie Soward, if you followed NRL. Mm-hmm. And yeah. He had a very unique technique in kicking a footy, and it was just methodical. He had all the steps out in place so that he focused on the process, not the outcome. And it didn't matter whether he was doing it at training, or he was just doing it down the park on his own, or doing it in front of, you know, 80,000 screaming or booing fans. He had his process and he stuck to it every single time. Now, I sort of think sometimes with hunting, we don't get that opportunity to do the same as well, because, you know, you can sort of imagine stadiums and booing, and you can sort of have noise, and there's extras for that. But in the moment with hunting, there's so many elements that can go. And if you're not seeing deer, you know, shooting paper, whether it be with a bow and arrow, whether it be a rifle, is very different to the real thing when you're actually there. And it's one thing I feel, myself included, it's been a difficult one, in the sense that when you go to the rifle range, you've got a bench and you just sit there with a rear rest and a front rest, and you just take your shots. Depending on the range, that my local range, that's all you can do. So you don't get the opportunity to shoot in different positions like you were talking about that sort of, you know, semi-squat or half kneel down or whatever you want to call it. It makes a big difference with angles, with releases, with technique, and you can't always work it out. And then I look at it from a rifle perspective. There's a million different trees out there, and you might have a rest, you might not have a rest. There's just so many different things that can happen. And because you're in an environment that's forever changing, it's a little bit different to an athlete, like kicking a footy over posts. Like they know the ground's flat. They know, okay, the position might change, but the reality is they get to pick how far away that kick is, you know, for their own angle. They're kicking off the same tee. Like it's very different. There's a lot more modifications that you have to do. And sometimes it's more difficult to train for that. So props to you being able to restrain yourself on that first one and letting it down, because a lot of people wouldn't have been able to do that. They let one fly is probably before going, hey, I'm going to hold off here, especially 5 years in. So, mate, well done. That's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, thanks. It's it's just one of those things. It just was a fairy tale for lack of a better word. Like it just, everything went right, and I think that's what 5 years does to you. You know, for the other 4 years, the deer's walking the other way. You know, the wind's different. It's a different time of day. You get there 15 minutes later. You get there 15 minutes earlier. Or a lot of the time was the experience. You've got to expect them to be just around the corner. But yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't expect it to take 5 years. But honestly, for the first few years, I didn't even know that there was deer in Australia. So I was envisioning getting a whitetail in Canada or just something like that. And then I come back and I realize that some of the best deer hunting in the world is on our doorstep, which is just one of those things that we're just so lucky for. But yeah, 5 years is, it was a long time. And definitely when we were driving back to Sydney and I had the rack just in the back there, that was something that I'd really imagined as well. So that was pretty cool to have that. And yeah, still eating it. We've got a roast in the fridge that I'm going to be cutting up into slices for some schnitzel, which will be good. But add to the ever-growing list of things that I've cooked with it.
Mate, well, on that, I know you love cooking, and I had a crack at tonight from my first deer, the Roosa. So we had it sliced up into sort of stir fry, and I've been hanging for some rainbow steak from Chinese. So my wife is a pretty decent cook. So I tasked her to work out how they do it and then to do it. And I went and grabbed the kids. And I tell you what, she killed it. Absolute nailed it tonight. The rainbow venison is just, what was absolutely delicious. Mate, what has been your favorite that you've cooked up with it?
Oh, Matt, that's the toughest question. I think it's got to be the first meal. So when we went hunting and right before we left, I think we were both pretty keen to come home with something. So we went blackberry foraging, and I picked a pretty decent bucket of that. And I was like, originally had ideas to obviously cook it with whatever venison we got on that trip, but I was like, yeah, I'll just keep it and sort of kept it in the fridge. And then all of a sudden, it came very much in handy. So it was a blackberry and red wine sort of sauce, buttery sauce that we cooked on the side of backstrap, and we just did the backstrap in a really nice hot pan and just served it with that sauce and just with some roast veggies, and it was just absolutely fantastic.
It's good, isn't it?
It's so good. It's so
Oh,
good.
how lucky are we that we can just go out and get just such beautiful quality meat? I constantly just reflect on it and go, we are so lucky we can do this. And yes, it's hard, but I think it tastes that much better when you've had to slog it out and do it hard. And that, yeah, it's not even the flavor, it's that sense of achievement that you did this, that from A to B, you have done the whole process. That's cool. It's such a good feeling. I can't even imagine. Like, I was so happy and excited, and like, hats off to you with the bow after 5 years. That just must be another level on top of what I was feeling.
And to be able to serve it, because I was hanging out with mum and dad and the missus as well. So to be able to serve it to my parents as well, like that's a really, really cool thing. And I reckon there's something sort of deep down in us, sort of like the caveman in us, you know, the old hunter gatherer. There's just like to serve something that you've harvested, butchered, aged the meat, spent the time, and then cooked it, to serve that to your parents and really be able to give that back. I think it's just like a magic that, you know, is indescribable, honestly.
Yeah, oh, it's cool. It's so I had the other night the first time we've like realistically just had the whole meal was completely ours. Everything in the garden with the venison that I got as well. And it was cool just to say, hey, this whole plate is just all mine. It's not just a little bit here or a little bit here. There was no supermarkets involved in that meal. And geez, that felt good too. And turning it into a really nice meal. And it's even probably better that the kids love it. And to the point where I was actually having to cook up a lot more. There was one night there, they ate all of it, and then they're still sitting there and going, can we have more meaty? And I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, so I had to cook up more. And that's so cool too, knowing that, I don't know, it's something primal that I'm being able to be a provider for the family. That's cool.
Yeah, really is special. And it just gives you such a different appreciation for your food. We still haven't bought any grocery store beef since I harvested that buck. So that's been, I mean, not a significant amount of time. It's like 5 weeks, but I just haven't been able to justify it. Every time we're like, oh, we can do this. But then but there's venison in the fridge, so in the freezer, so there's just, yeah, it just draws you to it, and then all of a sudden that's the death of one animal. Still, it's provided countless meals and does taste really good. I mean, we've cooked some ripper food like chili and stuff like that, and it's even prompted conversations at work, which is really interesting. So I'm quite open about the fact that I hunt, which is sometimes a bit of a workplace risk. Like I do tend to gauge the room slightly, but it's something that's once discussed, and you'd be surprised at how many people are receptive to that, and it does give you a bit of a chance to, educate people a little bit and explain why you do it. And I would consider myself a pretty good proponent of that. I took every bit of meat I could off that animal, and we're going to do something with the hide. And I've got the antlers next to me, and nothing is going to waste there. Even the feet are going to a mate to for his dog and all that sort of stuff. So I think eventually we sort of talked about, I'm going to cook a big chili, and that's a pretty good sort of opening meal. I'm bringing it into the office, and we're all going to have some. So it's sort of, this snowballing thing that's really, really cool and really exciting.
Yeah, well done. That's it is a tricky thing when you don't know how someone will receive it and being open about it. And you do want to portray it in a good light and portray hunters in a good light as well. So it is that balance, I think, and how you get it across and talk about it. So some people have the ability to do that really well and others not so much. So it is a skill. So yeah, good on you for doing that and having a crack. And then it wasn't just one. It was a second.
Yeah, I mean that's, I mean they all say it, don't they? When it rains, it pours. Once you get your first, the next one comes. It happened for you in pretty short order as well. I think you've got maybe a few more to talk about as well, but that's a funny one. But yeah, so same spot, and the torrential rains that we had a couple of weeks ago decided to really put a dampener on my spirits. I was super keen. It was April 6th, I think. Which we know is a pretty hot sort of date in the rut. And yeah, I mean, I was seriously considering not going, which I think was my first interesting lesson. I mean, you sort of, the first one was still sort of hot on my mind, and I was like, not feeling that super strong drive, but I knew it was going to be a great day anyway. So eventually I roll out of bed and brave the torrential rain. I saw a flip car on the way up, and it was all sorts of craziness. Aquaplaning all over the road, and it was just absolutely some of the heaviest rain I've ever driven in. And I just kept thinking, I was like, I just keep going, and just think about if you got offered this spot, you would be absolutely taking it. If you only got offered this spot for one day during the rut, you would be taking it with both hands. So what are you doing? And I think appreciating private spots. So you obviously have a deer off on private blocks, which is some would say a bit of an asterisk, but I think adding the bone to the mix sort of balances things out slightly. But yeah, same spot, and I had a few sort of bucks that I knew were around. There was definitely a really, really big one that I got on camera, which was definitely the biggest I've seen, and would have been pretty cool to see. So yeah, I got down into that same gully, and instead of, I sort of knew where a lot of them had come from, so I sort of nipped further in there and just sat on a few logs. And at this point, honestly, the sun was almost out. It was just a little bit foggy, which is fantastic. It meant that they'd been probably down all night and be looking for a little bit of a walk around. So I get down there, and again, it was late because it was not worth going down there in the torrential rain. So I sort of timed it, and I think I got in around 8:30. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm just sort of hanging out, and I'm watching the spot. But I sort of, again, there's a bit of a mistake. I set up as if they would have to walk on a, if you imagine a sort of a 180 degree, they'd only be able to access like 40 degrees of available shot space to the right-hand side. So everything else was blocked by trees or anything. So in hindsight, that was definitely a good sort of learning, just set up that little bit closer. Yes, it's a little bit of a gamble sometimes, but if it means you have a lot more of a shot angle, take it every day. There was a fence in the way and all that sort of stuff. So hanging out, and then all of a sudden I hear some croaking, and it's just like, okay, this is always the thing that we love. You get in there and you start hearing that, and at first, sometimes it's far off and you're not really too sure if you heard it, because I feel like during the rut we could all hear croaking in our sleep. But yeah, all of a sudden it just gets closer and closer, and this absolutely beautiful, really nice Bambi looking buck. I can never remember the name of the hide there, but he was really nice and a super light tan, and just comes in and just absolutely gorgeous rack on him. And he's, given a nice lick and a nice preach, and that would have been the time to take the shot again. It's another story. And all of a sudden he just walks over this tree and just thrashes this tree. And it was just like, okay, this is just fantastic. I sort of got the bow up and I was ready to draw back potentially, but just again, no sort of shot was on there. And well, that had me glued to that spot pretty well for the rest of the day. I think I came back to the car for about an hour and a half, chatted to the landowner just so I could sort of keep my eyes open for a little bit. That's always good to chat to him. He's now become a bit of a friend, which is always nice. So you just sort of get that relationship going. But yeah, and then got back to that same spot and I got a little bit closer. So I was basically looking over this rub tree. It was on a fence line, scrapes all around and all that sort of stuff. So it was definitely the place to be. And yeah, so I think I sort of got back there for about 2 o'clock and it was not really a place to be sitting or standing. So it was quite uncomfortable. But yeah, so I was there for like 4 hours not moving, which is just sort of, I was like, okay, yep, I'm getting my sort of comeuppance here from this, from the buck, the other week. I'm starting to get back to normal a little bit, oh, this is hunting again was sort of the mentality because I think I was pretty hopeful as well. And yeah, so I knew that I wouldn't be back for about a week or two as well. So I was sort of tossing up whether to go and I knew that there was a bit of a hunting hole in there. There's a clearing in there that it's pretty hard to approach because they're pretty much going to see you from every angle, but it's a really nice productive clearing and it's sort of smack bang in the middle of a bunch of cover. So I had seen deer in there. I'd seen heaps of sign. I'd seen them on camera. And I knew it was a travel corridor. So I was like, well, you know what? It's the rut. Just don't worry about the smarts part of thing about preserving the spot. Just go in there and just have some fun. So I heard this buck croaking around and I eventually sort of slowly slip in there. And all of a sudden I see what I think is a doe sort of at the back and just sort of surfing around left to right. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. So, might be able to get shoot a doe, which would be nice, get some good meat, whatever, I'm not really too fast on the antlers. I mean, I was lucky my first deer was a buck and they're really nice to have, but for me, the meat's the meat at this point. Still be getting into it. But yeah, I sort of, settled down to this spot, about, a bit of a bush sort of about waist height. So I can sort of settle in behind that in a half kneeling position and hopefully be nice and prepared if she circles around. And then, again, by some sort of act of God, she circles straight round, straight towards me. And I see it's a little spiker. And he's got one little tiny antler about this long, about, 5 centimeters long. And then the other one's broken off. I'm like, oh, what a rough head. That's so good. I just love it. So he's just starts coming into me and sort of stops. And I'm like, oh, okay. Do I take a shot here? It's about 30 meters out. Again, I'd ranged a couple of trees. At this point and got my 20 meter spots, which I like to do. I like to sort of make like a finish line for the deer. So if they cross the finish line, that's it. And so I got that sort of spot set up. And yeah, just like the other one, just head down, just starts running straight towards me. And again, I was gonna call, I was considered calling when he was further away, but there was just, I mean, it sounds bad, it's just too easy. You just had to walk towards me anyway. So I'm kind of gutted I didn't get to call any deer, but that's all right. And yeah, so I draw back, take the shot. As he sort of stops at about 17 meters, and he drops on the spot. And in hindsight, there was a bit of spine in that. It was a bit of a funny angle. It was pretty low, and he'd sort of ducked away into it, away from it. So there was sort of a little bit of angle on that. And then I had to finish him off. So it wasn't as clean as the first one, which was, I think, a really good thing for me because it sort of really had me back to, understanding that it's not always that easy. You need to be extra prepared. You need to prepare for all those sorts of circumstances and just be better. I think there was also a slight range issue in the, under 17 meters. I think it was just under. There's just going to be that little bit of extra arc on the arrow as well as you're closer, which is just a little bit high. So a few things that really sort of taught me, and I'll be very open about that kind of stuff. If I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going to own it. But at the end of the day, this all still happened in, I think, probably under 2 minutes. From start to finish till he took his last breath. So still a relatively quick one. And yeah, it was really cool because I got to then go get the landowner and get him. And he wasn't there for the first one. He was away. So I got to, get him to join in on the experience, which was really cool. So, he was with me through the whole gutting process, which I talked him through that, explained, what you do, why you do. We had a little experiment. We left the guts there. And they're actually gone the next day, which is really interesting. So there's foxes around, so I'm assuming it was them. But Just really interesting to see how that sort of nature just picks that up. But yeah, and sort of talked him through the whole thing, and then we took it up to the house and hung it and skinned it and all that sort of stuff. And again, just sort of talked him through it, and he got a little bit of meat out of it, which was really cool. So he was happy to take that. And yeah, all of a sudden it was like two for two, and Mrs. wasn't too happy with that because there was no room in the freezer.
A good problem to have.
Absolutely.
How'd you go with the butchering?
The second time when it was hung up was a lot easier than the first. And I think also I just had that practiced hand. I understood little things, like even when you skin it, just trying to take off as little meat, where those seams are and all that sort of stuff. Luckily, I had a bit of experience cutting meat. I decided, and they had talked about a 5-year-long journey. In year two of the journey, when I moved overseas into Canada, I got a job at a retail meat cutting place, just at a grocery store. But I decided to learn to cut meat and the little ins and outs of at least cutting beef and stuff like that, so I could then carry it on to game butchery. So I definitely had all the tools, physically, like knives and all that sort of stuff, and had definitely learned quite a few things along the way. So in terms of following videos and stuff like that, was I think that a little bit easier. So again, yeah, but it was definitely tough, and I definitely wasted more than I would have liked. And I think that's just part of the journey.
I think the learning process on it, again, we talk about getting to practice things. You don't get the chance to practice that skill unless you get animals on the ground. So it's a tough one. You can go and do courses and things like that, but the reality is, even that's a one day, it's a one-off thing. To get good at something, you've got to do it regularly. And until you're regularly into getting game, you're not going to be the world's greatest butcher. So it's part of the learning journey, as you said, and I definitely butcher my animals. It's not that, I don't mind saying it, because hey, you've got to learn somewhere, and as long as you're doing the best you can, then hey, props to you, and just keep going at it. You'll get better, and that's all you can ask at the end of the day. So when you say you wasted meat, I know what you're like. I don't reckon there's much meat wastage. I reckon you've been pretty hard on yourself.
I think just the little things, what I definitely wanted to make sure I did was, I kept the knife clean as possible. But they're inevitably really going to get slightly dirty when you're field dressing and stuff like that. So I just sort of tried to trim all that sort of stuff off. And it was more about the outer layers sort of around the hide and stuff like that, that I would have liked to have had a little bit more access to. That was definitely not fun fleshing that hide. It was pretty full. So I think that was probably the main thing. But again, it was dark at that point, and the animal was a lot larger than I was used to dealing with as well. Yeah, I think it's one of those things. Definitely, you learn a little bit as you go, which you said, you're always going to learn more the more you do. And only two animals in terms of the big boys so far. I guess three technically with the moose, but.
Yeah, look, that's the one for me, is that there's never a wasted hunt, as far as I'm concerned. Whether you are successful or not successful, I have never come home and gone, I haven't learnt something, even just testing things out. And that happened on my second year. I know I hit you up and you couldn't because you'd started the new job. So I headed back down south because I was,
Spewing.
yeah, well, we found some good areas with some really good sign, and I was pretty confident going, hey, I want to get back into that area that we were in, and there were some fresh rubs and scrapes, and we're game on here. The does were in there. Oh, I'm confident that this is the opportunity to get a buck on the ground. And so I headed back down to Maragul North with a mate, and as we're pulling into the forest, you'll love this one, literally pulling into the forest, and hadn't even gone 50 meters along the road, and there's a fallow doe in the middle of the road. We're talking midday. I'm just sitting there going, what the bloody hell? And this was my mate's first ever hunting experience ever. Like, it could not be more new. Literally bought the clothing, I think, that morning or the day before, like brand spanker. So we're driving in, this fallow doe's there. She ducks off to the left, and I look over, and there's three of them over on the side. So there was a four in total. And I just went, man, you've literally come, spent 30 seconds in a state forest, and you've seen deer. What a start. And he's like, is that good? And I'm like, yes, that's very, very good.
That's a question you hate to hear.
Oh, look, again, new. And that's, we all started somewhere. So I've just got excited going, man, it's midday. This is going to be a good couple of days here. And I hadn't got another 50 meters and there was multiple cars full of blokes come ripping down the road, pulling up, jumping out of cars and whatnot. I'm like, oh, okay. There's a lot of people here. And so I went for the drive to have a look at the campsites, and the one where we stayed, there was multiple people in there. And I was like, oh, that's not great. Went further down and found another camping spot, which was packed. And I was like, oh, man, all right, that's not ideal. I've got a third one that not many people know about here. I'll try that one. Couple of people in there as well. And I was like, oh, my God. And there were just people right throughout. And to the point when I got to our area that we were looking at, there was multiple people I could see in there walking. And I was just like, oh, well, I'm not the type of person that's going to go in there and hunt the same area because, A, safety, you know, it's public land at the end of the day. So I was a bit disappointed that someone was there. But, look, it's the rut. It's public land. It's a well-known forest. So I just went, all right, look, we're here at 12. We got down early for a reason so that we could make a bit of a hike back to another forest that I'd spent some time in, and went, all right, let's go. So we did the drive, got out of there, went to the other forest, made camp. Didn't get the opportunity to hunt that night. There was an issue with the maps on. So DPI, I sometimes just rely on the Hunt New South Wales app, the DPI one. And it wasn't working. So it was pulling up Maragal North, but it would not for the life of me work on my phone or my mate's phone. So we're trying to get access to the maps and going, well, it's not working, period. Now, I don't know whether if we run into a DPI ranger, they're going to be happy that, well, why didn't you have a Venza or why didn't you have something else? Yes, I appreciate there's an issue with that app, but is that good enough? Like, could you have taken another step? And so I just went, look, doesn't matter. We've made camp. Let's shoot out, probably about a 20-minute drive to go get some reception, and then let's just do that. I'll download it onto a Venza. You do the same and we're good to go. So we end up doing that. As we're driving out to go get reception, probably 5 minutes into the drive, this Samba spiker just comes walking out of the forest onto the main road. And as we're driving up, and I've just gone, I got excited. Holy crap, it's a Samba. And he's gone, what? Is that good? And I just went, man, I have never seen one of these in real life. So, yes, that's bloody – I was just pumped even more. To the point where, yeah, I was a little disappointed that I wasn't going to be able to hunt that patch that we'd worked and I felt confident in. But just seeing that, I was, like, super pumped as well. I was like, oh, cool, this is awesome. So we just downloaded everything, got back in there, couldn't hunt that first one because we had to move and whatnot. But, hey, that's public land, all good. So we went out the next morning, first morning up, just going for a stroll. It was an interesting time because my mate being brand spanking new, it was a very steep learning curve about how quiet and slow and what you're looking for and all those sort of things. We did manage to see a buck and we sort of snuck in and got relatively close to where we got a glimpse of him, and it was just – it was pretty cool. I think he's about 20 meters and he was just rubbing a tree. Well, that's what it sounded like, but it was just that, you know, the thick sort of blue, not blue gum saplings, what are they called? Anyway, they like the blue gum saplings, and it was just super thick. You could not see for the life of you 5 meters ahead. So it wasn't a bad start to the morning. And actually, no, before that, driving along the road and we've looked up and there was a deer skylined on the road. Just with like first light, just, oh, it was just a picturesque, awesome scene. And I just said to me, mate, I pointed it out. He saw it too. He goes, oh, that's what, that could be a photo. And I was like, mate, 100%. How cool. Like, what a start to the morning. So that was amazing. And he's sort of, I think, a bit tainted because we just were seeing deer. And I was like, it's not like this normally, mate. Like, because that was the question he said. He goes, how long did it take you to get one? And I'm like, mate, this is, you know, it's not generally like this. I don't know what's going on at the moment. There's plenty around. It's a good time of year, being the rut or the pre-rut at this stage. And so we saw the buck and then we got into just the hunting and went for a walk, just started to explore and whatnot. And lucky enough to we're probably at it for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, just walking down a couple of trails, and I spotted a spiker. Just saw his tail, and we end up sort of closing in on him. He was making his way away from us. So he's walking away from us, and the wind was great. It was coming, like, it wasn't super hard, but it was just like it was a decent amount. And so I was fairly confident that I could make a fair bit of noise to try and close that gap and really get, you know, close that distance and get into a good shooting range. So I was able to do that. So I started to motor a little bit to get right up on him. Didn't have any shooting sticks, and where we were, there was no good rest. So I sort of wanted to try and get as close as possible, and sort of got within sort of 60, then back out to 80, and sort of up and down, just waiting to see what he was doing. And then he started to move a little bit to the side, you know, so, and it gave me that sort of broadside shot. And I was like, oh, nice, here we go. So I think it was about 80 meters. I didn't range it, but I'd be guessing pretty close to 80. And so I was freestanding and had the 308, the ticker, still had its stickers on, brand spanking new. It's one thing I like to do first hunt is I always leave the stickers on. Don't know why, just always have. So still had them on, literally raised her up, got a good sight picture, felt pretty confident, got the breathing nice and steady. It was a pretty slow stalk, so it wasn't, the heart wasn't really beating too much, and shot him and dropped him on the spot. So it was awesome. I just was like, yep, how good, you know, second hunt after our one, second state forest, probably a bit of a blessing in disguise. It's given me a bit more sort of confidence in my own, I guess, knowledge and ability of where I am. You know, you sort of, after that first one, I was like, oh, well, I've spent a fair bit of time in that forest now. Is it just because I now know the forest, or can I replicate that somewhere else? So having a new forest and getting out to that, well, relatively new, I hadn't been there in a while, but you know what I mean? Like if you're not there regularly, yeah, you don't know what's going on. And getting out there and being able to get the job done again was really, I was super happy with. And the best thing about this one, there was no issue with the liver. I think, I don't know what I was happier about when I gutted it and cut him open. I sat there and just went, oh, like it was a relief. I'm not going to lie, because I was just like, come on, yeah, I want the meat. Like it was just, it was in the back of my mind, and they weren't close areas, but I was sitting there going, oh, please, please don't let this one go to sort of make me leave it behind too. So super happy about that one, and just went to work and got out the back straps, hung them, and then started going through the shoulders and the legs. And I got to the end, probably had about, I reckon probably three more cuts, and I don't know what happened, but I somehow managed to put the blade through my index finger. And I was using a Havilon, you know, the Havilons and Piranha, I think they're called. So it's a scalpel. It's freaking sharp. Definitely. I don't even know how it happened. I still have no idea. I was so cautious and methodical the whole time, not cutting towards myself. Somehow I did this, that the blade was facing up and I was cutting through skin and I was moving it away from me. And my left hand must have somehow been there, and it's just veered over and just went straight in. I honestly don't know. I can say two things. A, I've got really nice white bones. That's one thing. Really happy about that side of it. I was able to see them. I can say the second thing was I'm pretty well versed in first aid, so that was all good. Hand sanitizer going in is not a fun experience. It was very, very, I knew I was alive, which is always a good thing. And then just gave her the wrap up, cleaned it as best I could, wrapped her up and just went, all right, this thing's a good, probably knuckle to knuckle cut down to the bone. Probably going to have to go have a look at this and get some stitches. So did the old packed it up, got everything. It was pretty good, to be honest, got all the meat, so didn't have to worry about that or continuing sort of. So that was good. And then hiked it out of there, went up to emergency and end up getting a couple of stitches in the finger, get them to clean it, a couple of stitches in the finger, and hopefully lesson learnt. But, man, I was talking to a few mates about this, and I still don't understand how it happened, because I never had my hands anywhere near. The only thing I can think is when I was putting some pressure, it was slightly ahead of the blade and it just happened to veer off as it was cutting through or whatnot. So, and then one of my mates is pretty experienced. I talked to him and he said, yep, Havilon blades, sometimes they're a bit deadly on those. Like they're not as forgiving and they can nip you pretty quickly. So, hey, look, learning experience, we'll probably go even slower next time and make sure that that doesn't happen, because it was not it wasn't a mad dampener, because I'm not going to lie. I went to emergency, was there for a few hours, got it stitched up, and I was hunting that afternoon. I wasn't going to let, you know, a little nick on the finger stop me from getting back out there in the arvo in the next morning. So, yeah, it was just one of those things. But I was just, oh, man, it was a bit frustrating that I just lost a lot of time exploring the forest to sit around an emergency room and have to get stitched up. But look, all part of it, good learning experience, wasn't that bad, and you know, it's fully recovered now, so I can't complain too much. But a bit of a wake-up call to say, hey, even when you think things are, you're being super safe, be safer. Yeah, is what it is. But what do you do? It was so frustrating. Yeah. One of those ones. But hey, we all make mistakes, and as long as you learn from them, and hopefully it won't happen again, because it wasn't something fun or enjoyable, that's for sure.
Mm. Well, they do say a sharp knife tends to be safer, but I guess who knows what could have happened then.
Well, look, it was a super clean cut. I will say that. There was no damage. Like literally just pushed it together. When the doctors cleaned it out, they just pushed it together, and it was easy to push it together. Like honestly, like if I had super glue, you probably could have done that. Because it was cut so clean, they actually said that. They sort of went, this is a real clean cut. But probably because of how big and how deep, they wanted the doctor just to, you know, throw a couple of sutures in and just to be on the safe side. So end up getting a little bit infected, which was a bit of a pain. Hard to keep it clean and dry, especially when you're in the bush. So I had a couple of good wraps. They were nice enough to give us a couple of waterproof wraps and whatnot. But one of the things I found sort of a couple of days afterwards when I was back in Sydney is it was starting to, like, I used some Savlon ointment just to, you know, try and keep it clean, and antiseptic cream and whatnot. And it started the top sort of skin. I think the top skin had sort of peeled away and it was just dying for the new skin to come through. And then it sort of came, it was really weird. It was like it got wet, but it didn't, because I was using waterproof bandages and keeping it, like, being pretty paranoid. But then it got a bit like, you know, when you get in, you're in a bath or in a body of water for a long time and it gets like your hands get real pruney. It was like that. So that was a bit of a problem, because then the top started to lift and that eventually fell off anyway. But round of antibiotics and was all done and dusted. It wasn't that big a deal. It was never sort of too bad, but was just, it's not ideal. But again, good learning curve, good payback for me, because I will say that I had to go get the stitches out and my wife got called urgently into her work. So I had to go to the GP with my twins and son in tow. So it would have been hilarious. Like, I had a couple of people saying to us, like, mate, geez, I thought this was going to be a nightmare, because I got in there and I've got two kids in a pram, one in the backpack carrier, and trying to keep them sort of entertained and quiet in the middle of a doctor's surgery while I get waiting to see the doctor before I get stitches out, and then juggling them on, you know, half of fingers all sort of, you know, taped up, and it was pretty funny. But that was just an extra challenge and probably a good learning curve to say, geez, it was so hard for a few days there with having a finger out of action and not being able to bend it. And then, like, changing nappies and stuff like that. Jeez, it was a pain in the backside. So won't be wanting to do that again anytime soon. But lesson learned.
Yeah, it really makes you appreciate you having everything usable. You know, making sure your little fingers are out of the way is really important. But, yeah, just general safety as well when you're hunting. You know, you don't really realize what's going to take you out of action and even stop your hunting.
Yeah, bloody hell. Well, one of my mates, I was talking to him, and he was saying he knows a couple of guys that use the steel gloves, the cut-proof gloves, just because even if you are pretty confident and experienced, an accident can happen at any time. And I haven't got one, but I was like, I don't know. Maybe that, from a safety perspective, wouldn't be a bad option, but it's just another thing to carry, I suppose. And I think that's butchering on the ground is so much different to hanging. And I feel that's such a more difficult thing to do, especially when you don't do it that much. Learning that and being able to do that, because it is awkward. There's a lot of times you're cutting and moving and it's just awkward. So it is what it is, and hopefully I'll get some more deer on the ground and keep getting better at it as I go. But most definitely very different to having the animal hanging. Might be something else I start to look at and go, all right, how do we manage to hang? I've got one of the lift and locks, which is great for back at camp. I don't know if I want to be lugging that around the bush because it does have a bit of weight to it, but it would make it a hell of a lot easier once you start butchering. So maybe it's the option of get the guts out, let it drain and piss back off, grab it, take some stuff out that you don't need, get back in there and hang it before you start cutting it up. I don't know. It's something I'm toying with. I want to practice a couple of different ways and see what is the best method and go from there. I suppose size of the animal depends too. There's a big difference between a fallow and a red or a samba or something like that too. So if I'm lucky enough to ever get one of them, that changes the dynamic as well. So yeah, good fun, all good fun. And as I said, you keep learning, don't you? Every time.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting trade-off, especially, yeah, like you said, with the larger animals. I think you just sort of have to learn the different techniques. And obviously if you have like a second person with you, that makes a real difference. I definitely would like to have one of those packable gambles though. Even if you just got some rope, you can sort of at least get it half off the ground. It starts to make a little bit of a difference there, especially if it's cold enough and you're able to keep hunting as well. You know, some of those sort of high mountain, sort of Victoria, that kind of area. If it's an evening or something like that, just get a packable gamble and you sort of get your mate to hoist it up or something like that. I'm sure there's ways around it, some sort of single pulley. But yeah, I think it definitely helps to be able to do it in all sorts of situations, so you can sort of not have to rely on one method as well, I reckon.
Yeah, agreed. I'll tell you what a highlight of the trip was, though. I will say this. So two other things happened. And no, the cutting was not a highlight. But one was we had a 20-minute croaking conversation with a buck. That was cool. He started going at it. I got out my croaker from H2K Hunting Calls. Thanks, Paul. And had that little bad boy going, and he was coming in, backing off, coming in, backing off. It was cool, but it went on for a good, I reckon, 15 to 20 minutes. It was cool. But where he was, it was just that thick. It wasn't even worth trying to go in there. Like, there was just no way. There was no trails. It was, you couldn't see a meter in front of you. So trying to coax him out to get him to come over towards us where it was a bit clearer. And he was coming, and then he'd just stop, and then you'd hear him going further away, still croaking, but just wasn't able to get him in, tried the rattling and just nothing. But look, I had a great time. That was something I was like, all right, again, getting those opportunities or experiences, that's cool. I wasn't able to get back down south for the rut this year because I ended up going up with the Hunters Campfire Boys to Nundle. So that was a fantastic time, and I'll talk about that at a later stage. But just wanting to use the croaker and get them, you know, get that conversation going, try and getting them in, have them biting, I suppose, is the word that they were. He was coming in. He was coming in, backing off. That was cool because I was like, okay, so I'm not terrible at calling here. he's actually responding sort of the way I want, which was pretty cool as well. And that was just another one to remember. And then funny story. Again, my mate was brand spanking new. Somehow he worked out this theory in his mind that the quietest way to walk was to wait for me to get like 15 meters ahead because I was going super slow. And he would wait for me to get there, and then he'd walk really quickly to catch me up. So it was like this leapfrog sort of approach. So I actually walked past definitely a Samba because we got honked, but I had gone way past, and it wasn't until he did his little semi quick run that's apparently quieter for him that we got honked, and I know he jumped, and it scared the bejesus out of me because I wasn't even thinking about that a Samba would be around there. So it was a pretty cool experience. But, man, as I said to him, I said, you have just experienced so much on this trip. You've done, like, I've been hunting for a while now and I've never been honked. And I said, you've been honked on your first go. We saw a Samba on your first go. We got a deer on the deck on your first go. Yes, he didn't. He wasn't the one that harvested it, but still, like, he was there. Just a different experience for his first and for my few, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting, it'll give you a different appreciation, I think. I remember when I went properly hunting for the first time, and like in Australia, I even found it hard to believe that there was just going to be deer in the forest. Like, I knew there was because of the harvest reports and I'd seen tracks and stuff, but just to even put two and two together and expect them to be around the corner was enough. And let alone he's seeing two different types of deer and hearing them call and all that sort of fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, croaking as well. Like, man, the first time I heard croaking was last year and it was awesome, but I was like, far out. Like, it's taken me a while for that. Still haven't heard a red roar. That was one of the goals for this year and hasn't happened. But, I mean, that's part of hunting, isn't it, at the end of the day? And, yeah, first go out here and croak and hit, it's just all happening. And I was just like, man, what a cool first experience. If you're not hooked after that, nothing's going to get you hooked, I don't think.
Yeah, especially for a state forest as well. I think next time you should just sort of point him in the right direction and see how he goes on his own. He'll start to gain appreciation pretty soon, I think.
Well, it's that it's that tricky one of getting people in and keeping them in.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
you know, as I said to him, this doesn't happen all the time. I said, there's been plenty of trips where I ain't seen anything. You've just had a very lucky trip where we got onto a lot of stuff. It was, it was exciting. So, but, happy days.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those things as well. Like, it's sort of a bit of a corny old saying there, saying, if I was in it for the killing, I don't know, I would have quit years ago. And I think that's definitely part of it. Like, I definitely would have had to build an appreciation for everything outside of the kill. And I mean, it's an awesome, crazy, wild feeling when you do harvest an animal, and there's a whole other experience associated with butchering and eating, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, just appreciating being out in the bush, just sort of being there and just enjoying the sounds and the smells and the quiet and, you know, just the little things, like even just sitting there and having a wallaby come past and, you know, having him not see you or something like that, or just, you know, the birds and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's just one of those things you've got to really appreciate.
I think it is. I think if you are getting into hunting just because you're going to be pulling the trigger a lot, especially in a state forest, it ain't going to happen. So I don't think those people would last very long either. So it's not I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but it's just hunting is tough. It's not an easy thing, and I don't think it's meant to be easy too. And the rewards are so much better when you've slogged it out. Like, I reflect on my journey and it's so good because I just feel like I've earned so much, and that's been a great one. And now the year 2024 started fantastic. Like, two from two, two different state forests, two different deer on the deck. Man, I'm chuffed. Could not be happier at how this has started. Yeah, here's what it is. So I don't know if I would have appreciated hunting if I didn't have to do that hard slog at the start and really go into those state forests and spend days and not see things, and getting to the point now where most times I go to a state forest, new state forest or whatever, and I'm seeing deer. That's awesome. It's a step in the right direction, and that's just, that feels rewarding within itself. And then getting two on the deck in different state forests, I'm just so pumped about that. So it's good times. I reckon the rest of the year, I can't wait to get back out hunting, and yeah, it's exciting. It's just, it just makes you just pumped. And then this time of year too, seeing everybody's successes and like hearing your two and hearing how excited, I know you called me, I think it was close to midnight when you called me on that second one. And but it's awesome. Like, you know, like it's so, and then my mate Dan, he got his first two ever. First year he got a toe and then got his buck, and that's bloody awesome. So hopefully he'll come on and tell his story. And just seeing other people posting first year or finally got this or it came together, it's just, it's so good. It just makes me pumped up. And yeah, what can I say? It's a great time of year.
Yeah, it totally does. It definitely teaches you a lot of patience. You know, just endless patience for just slowing right down, and something that we're really not used to nowadays. I think especially because everything's on demand, and when you want it, everything can be there in a second. You can get your groceries delivered. You can, you know, transfer money in 2 seconds, and to be able to slow down and have a really properly delayed gratification reward, you know, that's just a feeling that I think not a lot of people are going to experience more and more. So when you feel that, it's next level. And you know, you talked about the rifle, the amount of times I did consider sort of picking up the rifle, or, you know, definitely was around the corner from getting my application. And I'm sure I'll still do that because I definitely want to get into some bird hunting and, you know, and be nice to get a rifle for a little bit more of the meat harvest side of things. I think the bow is still going to always have a close place in my heart, especially having the first one be with the bow. And who knows, maybe I'll go crazy and get into the longbow, but I think we're still a fair ways off that for now.
Well, mate, not a small accomplishment. So hats off to you. Well done for sticking at it. I'm super happy for you. Well done again. Just, yeah, such great news. So thanks for coming on and sharing it. Really appreciate it. I know it won't be the last time you're on the podcast, but, mate, well done. Just, yeah, enjoy that venison, and that accomplishment of any deer with a bow is outstanding. Don't let the fact that you mentioned before, I heard you say, oh, a little bit of an asterisk because it was on private. Nah, no way, mate. That's rubbish. You, any deer with a bow is bloody hard work, and it's a feat. So, and you got two. So, mate, be super proud. Well done.
Thanks, Clark. Yeah, I appreciate it, mate.
All right, guys. I'll catch you next time. Bye for now. If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.